I think it just takes a lot of reflection and truly understanding what you want to do in life. And then, you know, once you've come to that decision, right, then it's about understanding what do you want to do next.
Hi, I'm Mark Gagne.
And I'm Chris Corcoran, and you're listening to Tech Sales is for Hustlers. Tech Sales for Hustlers is a podcast where we catch up with Memory Blue alums and reminisce about their start in high-tech sales with us.
Let's go get some, Corcoran.
Gagne, you know I'm ready.
This is going to be good. Corey Root in the house, Corcoran.
VA up in MA.
Corey, let's get into it. How you doing, man?
Good. It's great to be back with you guys.
Swole. Yeah. The first thing I said is, like, Corey, he's got a t-shirt on. Dude, guys put on some muscle.
Yeah, I'm trying.
You look great.
And it's even a large.
Yeah, dude.
He left us a boy. He's coming back with me.
I didn't know. So he Corey worked for the 2017 December. And he was probably 20 pounds light. That's great. Dude, you had a good cork in that whatever program you're
on. Hey, come with
me. All right.
All right, Corey, let's
do this, man. You were down in Virginia, moved up Boston area.
Yeah.
So we're fortunate enough to track you down. Great, stay in touch with us. Responding when I ask you to do stuff like come on the podcast. So, but this would be for Chris and I, but also for the audience, just tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, you know, where you're from, growing up. We'll talk a little bit about that. Modulate.
Yeah. So I'm from a very small town in Pennsylvania called Clearfield. Probably like 4,000, 5,000 people. It's really small. 40 minutes outside of State College. All right. To our name is that we have the world's largest hamburger.
All right.
So you go to Denny's Beer Barrel Pub. They'll make you a 145-pound burger. It like requires like 72 hours of notice.
Really?
Yeah. That's the only thing I could tell people about the hometown.
It looks like you've been eating some of
Yeah. So lived there. You know, played a lot of baseball for them. Yeah.
Brother.
Okay. Little brother, 6 years older. He went to Pitt, same as me.
Okay.
He went for pharmacy.
Okay.
I went for marketing and human resources.
Yeah, we'll get that. So you were an athlete. But some kids work. Some kids play sports. So it was just.
Yeah, I played baseball for all the way up from T-ball at 3 or 4 to when I was 16 and my league ended.
Okay. Yeah. What you kind of like as a kid, personality wise?
I'm probably like eccentric and carefree, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's not a lot to do in the hometown. So pretty much just rode my bike every day playing pickup baseball and things at this time.
Was it one of those things that group that can we come back?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
there's nothing to do in my hometown. It grows smaller every year. And
what do your folks do? Like why do they live where they live?
They grew up there. So my dad grew up in Clearfield. My mom grew up in a town, 20 minutes away. Both my parents have actually worked in the same place since 18. My dad, it's crazy. My dad got a job at the Clearfield Area Hospital when he was 18 in the kitchen. And, you know, now he works in like the warehouse supply chain aspect of it.
Yep.
And my mom got a job at Department of Public Welfare when she was 18 and she's worked there ever since. It's crazy. Like the
unbelievable
classic, like 1980s, like get a job and stay there.
So you're in high school, you're like, wow, I'm definitely going to move away.
Yeah.
Grow up. What would you think we're going to do? We all have these kind of opportunities to be if you grow up.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was back and forth for a long time and I wasn't sure. When I went to college, I went undecided, but I was actually going to put creative writing as my major.
Yeah.
I was always good in English. I crushed books in the summer. I loved writing. I wanted to be a fiction writer. And then this guy in college, this professor for a project sat me down and he did like one of those scare tactics.
Yeah.
And it actually worked though. And he was like, you're going to be living in New York City, sharing a small apartment with 8 people, living off a waiter's salary, barely making it. And like, you may never, you know, get anywhere. And then I was like, all right, well, I really like I've always wanted to be financially independent, do whatever I want.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, maybe this isn't for me. about 2013. I think. So
your freshman year?
Freshman year, yeah.
Oh, freshman year, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So
it's like Pitt too. It's kind of Pitt.
Yes. Yeah. So that was actually it. So I went to a branch campus for 1 year.
Okay.
To this day, I don't understand how I didn't get in. I don't. I graduated top 10 in my high school. I thought I had average SAT scores, not anything out of this world. But
yeah.
You know, my brother got in with, you know, similar things, right? But I didn't. I really didn't apply to any other school. I applied to two other schools, and that was like 3 months after I applied to Pitt, because I knew in my heart I wanted to go to Pitt, and I was just like, I feel like I need some kind of backup plan.
Yeah.
So I got in those other schools. I toured Robert Morris, which is outside of Pitt. Yeah. I didn't like it, right? It's basically like, the campus looks like Clearfield. It looks like the countryside.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I accepted to their branch campus. Funny story, right? My envelope comes, and it's a small envelope, right? So they always say, if you have a small envelope, like, get ready for rejection, right? But I open it, and it says, you were accepted. And so I wrote it down. I started like celebrating with my parent.
Yeah.
So, like 5 minutes later, I pick it back up and it goes to the University of Pittsburgh, Johnstown. I didn't apply to that. Why would he do that? Right? Started off with, you've been rejected to the main campus. You got to go here. So I was really disappointed. I had to go there for a year. I didn't really enjoy it. I just made sure I got the best grades possible so I could transfer here. Because they always say that's hard to do, to transfer 1 year.
Yeah.
So I did that. But yeah, that conversation happened at the Johnstown campus.
And where's Johnstown?
That's also in central Pennsylvania. It's probably about an hour and a half away from where I grew up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why did you want to go to Pitt?
I don't know. I mean, my brother went there.
Yeah.
So I think just Pitt, I always knew, even from being a little kid, that I wanted to live in the city. And it was the only city I ever really like went to many, many times for Pirates games and such. And then, you know, seeing my brother when he went there. And so it was just kind of calling to me.
Yeah.
A lot of people in my high school went to Penn State because it's 40 minutes away. But
yeah.
My dad hated Joe Paterno growing up. He hated Penn State football. And so I think that like latched on to me that I also hated just Penn State as a whole.
Who did your dad like pick? Or did he like?
No, he likes he likes the most random sports team.
Yeah.
For Nebraska. Okay. I have no idea why. Yeah.
Those are tough times for your dad.
Yeah, fortunately. All right. So I love it. All right. So did your year, was it the press or at Johnstown told you, hey, dude, you want to be a writer?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, all right. No. And then you took that to heart.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it did actually scare. You know, I don't like the scare tactics that professors put on. Like my brother, he got a scare tactic from a professor when he was at pharmacy school. I think he had struggled when he initially got there, and the professor was like, you're not going to make it, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Right. But he did it, you know, like,
yeah.
I don't like a lot of the, you know, like, I feel like they're there to like, you know, like give a little encouragement. Right. But
yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of glad he did it. Right. Cause I might be living in a New York City apartment with that people right now.
That might not be that bad.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we had to change your major.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought, you know, where else can I use where can I use creativity that I would put into writing, right?
Yeah.
And so I thought the marketing, you know, might be a good aspect of it. I think part of it was that I saw this random show on CBS back in the day. It was like a one season show with Robin Williams. Cannot remember the name of it, but he was an advertising agency executive.
Yeah.
And it made it seem fun, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I looked into marketing and I thought like, all right, maybe like this maybe where I could use creativity skills, right? And a business degree is very practical, right? So, you know, I changed it to that.
When you're in college, it looks like you work in, you studied abroad, a bit professional business fraternity. That you like, I'm going to just tell us about those experiences. You got an interesting sales job.
Yeah. So business fraternity is probably the best thing I ever did, right? Met a lot of great people, a lot of networking opportunities
yep.
there, a lot of good times. The abroad, well, I should say that's the best thing I ever did, right? Because those are probably the best 3 months, 4 months of my life. Yeah. So I went abroad in Sydney, Australia, second semester of junior year. Just an incredible time. I mean, if anyone has the chance to go abroad, they should absolutely go abroad. You learn so much seeing other cultures,
yeah.
talking to people and all that.
It's that.
And, you know, the great thing was is that the program I did with Pitt, they guarantee, if you opted into it, they'd guarantee you an internship over there. So I go to work for this awesome company. It's called TEG. Yeah, it's called TEG. And so they're basically the Live Nation of Australia, right? They're the biggest one over there. They compete with Live Nation over there, right? So I got free tickets to, in their suite, to like Kevin Hart, to Kendrick Lamar. I got free tickets to a rugby game. It was an awesome, awesome experience. It was an HR internship, which I really didn't want necessarily, but you know, I was a major. I think they probably gave me an HR internship because there's not the HR program wasn't very big at Pitt. So there were probably a lot of marketing majors that went there, and they gave all those ones marketing internships. But I'm extremely happy with where they put me because of all those experiences I had.
Yeah,
and my boss was awesome.
Yeah. And then did that change your perspective at all, what you wanted to do? No, probably not.
No. I think, I the only reason I added HR on as concentration was with the recruiting aspect. I thought maybe there'd be a day I'd want to go into recruiting.
Yeah.
And so that's why I initially added it on. But yeah, seeing that side of HR, I think I probably steered me more towards marketing.
What classes did you enjoy at Pitt? Like, do they have, you study marketing?
Yeah.
Did like the sales, so the, you know, you had one in sales.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that, but did any of those classes push you towards, what kind of push you towards a sales sense? Door-to-door job?
Or? No. So I mean, I if I look back, my favorite class was consumer behavior and marketing, right? Really went into like the psychology and marketing. So that was probably my favorite class. I did have an intro to sales class. It was so easy. It was a guy that was running for House of Brett.
Yeah.
And he only had like one class a week. And he was notably like an easy professor. Very real with you, which I appreciate, but a very easy professor nonetheless. So that was my only experience in sales at that point. I never wanted to go into sales. I didn't even think my personality was right for it. I'm pretty introverted. The only reason I got into the sales internship I did after junior year was probably didn't apply for as many as I should have in Australia because I was having the time of my life. Yeah. You know, I came back and that one was, I interviewed for this place and I didn't know what I was probably some naivety there that there are like still some multi-level marketing like ish companies out there.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what this is. Yeah. There's a big company called, I didn't know this at the time, there's a big company called Sidcore, and they track out all these companies, right, with bigger companies. So I sold Verizon Fios, right? But we weren't Verizon Fios, right? Mine was called Opus Business Consulting, right? Sidcore also does like things like energy and stuff, right? So that's where I worked, but they wouldn't tell me like what the job was. I was very confused leaving there, like, what is this job? But I needed an internship, and I didn't really know these things existed out there, and I just thought like, all right, like let's go for it, right? So I kind of showed up not really even knowing what I was going to do with this job. So, but yeah, it was a door-to-door sales internship selling Verizon Fios internet home, internet, TV, and phone. And so
you're knocking on doors?
Yeah, knocking on doors in the
Pittsburgh
area.
Or Phelps.
Phelps.
Yep. Okay, wow, this is the real deal.
So I think my first day was just going, so it was a tough summer.
Pittsburgh?
Yeah. The tough summer, it's 6 days a week, right? Monday through Saturday. Get in the office about 10:30 a.m. So it starts a little late, but you don't get home until about 10, right? Because you're out in the field until 8:30, whenever it's getting dark in the summer.
Yeah.
And then you come back to the office, right? Circle around like a gong and like chant and scream.
Yeah.
And then go home. So, So my first day, that's when I learned like, oh man, like there were a lot of chants, right? And then you learn like how kind of weird the culture is, because my buddy took a job with another Sidcore, you know, consulting agency out of college, which we talked about later in life, right? And his was like in Gap or some kind of energy company, right?
Yeah.
And so even though it was completely different, they did the same chants and everything. It's almost like a cult.
Really?
Yeah. Like a weird. Yeah. And so, that
really did change.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'd get around a circle. We'd do like chants before we went out for the day. Yeah. So that was my first day. I think I got a half day that day. I just came in paperwork, chant, and then leave. Second day was my first day going out. I went out with my mentor, Drar, who was awesome in the field.
Yeah.
And I'm not making this story up. Knocked on a couple houses, didn't answer. First house we knock on, right? Lady answers. She's dealing with a couple of kids, right? They're screaming, they're yelling, whatever. And he's pitching her, blah, blah, blah. And like 2-3 minutes into it, this kid comes down to the hallway behind her, just pukes everywhere. And I'm like, what did I get myself into? And he goes on to pitch her. Like, he's just like, that's the thing. He's so good. He's like, you know, I would have just left, right? Rather than that. He was so aggressive. Like, he just let it happen. You know, like, this lady was cleaning it up, right? She shut the door, came back out. He's just still going at it. And I'm just like, if you'd have seen what I saw, you know, especially being the first door that someone answered, I was just thinking, like, what did I get myself into?
But you learn a lot doing that.
Oh, yeah.
That's the thing, right?
Yeah, no, nothing we did was like that. Yeah,
did it for the whole summer?
Yeah, I stuck with it. I did it for 13 weeks.
And why'd you stick with it? Besides the fact you probably had to. A lot of people probably quit it, right?
So yeah, and it's like it's a very rotating role there. I for me, it's just usually like when I say I'm gonna do something, I'll do it. Right? I want to stick to it, even if it's really hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, what was my there was really no other option, right? If I left that internship, I wasn't going to get another internship because it all failed.
Yeah.
And so I'd just be working, you know, I'd have to stay. I was going to stay in Pittsburgh likely. So I was just going to have to get like a normal job, like at Starbucks or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, I knew that this would give me better experience, learn something from it. And I like to just stick to something I say I'm going to do, especially because it's not like I went there full time, right? I knew there was an end to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it went well. I mean, to a degree, right? I got promoted very quickly. I think like in my first 2 or 3 weeks, right? To like, I think it's team lead that they call it.
Yeah.
Right. Then, you know, they train like the entry level people different than team lead, and team lead can take people out and mentor them and et cetera. So
different chance.
Oh yeah. There are many different chances. Sometimes they will bring people in. People will fly in like the top people on the multi-level marketing that have like been there a while. And the way it works, right, is so if you, you know, open, you know, what you want to do is open an office, and then you want other people to go open up other offices in other cities. And then you get money from those offices. And if those people, you know, get people to open offices, you also get money from those offices. Yeah. Right. So you'd have some of these people that were like really wealthy to this company come in and just like give you a chance.
Yeah.
Throw a chat. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, another, we got chased by the cops, you know, a couple of times
really?
This summer because the guy that owned the business refused to get solicitation permits.
Yeah.
And so if you went to a really wealthy area, sometimes you get the cops going on you. And I remember there's this one time an area got really angry with him. Me, myself had just gotten stopped by the cops that day. And I think some other ones as well. And I think, you know, some official had called him, and so he said, you know, we're going to stay away from that place because they're really angry.
Yeah.
But I go back out into the field the next day. I mean, I was mentoring a new guy that just started, and someone else was driving me out there, and he refused not to go somewhere else. He was like, no, I got somebody follow-ups to do out here.
Oh.
So he's driving me there. I don't have any control. So I was like, all right, fine. So I'd taken this new guy out to mentor him, and I'm scared that we're going to get stopped by the cops, and I'm going to have to pay a fine. I do not want to pay a fine.
Yeah.
Right. It was not a salary position. It was all commission based.
Yeah.
And so I take into this neighborhood. It was like a little like off the road, and you could tell this community. We knocked on this door and we didn't get the sale. And this lady gave me a look, and I don't know if I was being paranoid, but I like ran away. And I called the guy that owned the business.
Yeah.
And I told him like what was happening. And he was like, well, I told you not to go there. So if you get stopped, you're paid a fine. And so I made this kid sprint. Yeah. Like we sprinted down the road. And I just thought, like, what? Oh, man, this poor guy, he just started, but I'm not paying this fine. So we, like, hit behind some, like, trees. But, well, my guy came and picked us up. But it was,
But, Corey, I know we're joking about it.
Running for the ball.
You're learning a lot.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Job, that job, you learn a ton. Going door to door?
Absolutely. I
know those houses?
Yeah. I mean, when people would answer, I can't even, it's weird to think about nowadays how, you know, I most of the time I was out there alone. When someone would answer, I would do a joke. That was always my opener. I had an arsenal of jokes.
Really?
I can't envision myself doing that. Like, it was such an odd, out of place summer that I can't imagine knocking on a door, someone answers, and I just go into like this joke skit.
You say, hi, my name's Corey, I got a joke for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
Absolutely. Yeah. Get them laughing and then like go into it.
You know. I knew you had that job. I didn't know the stories. I think that's crazy. But, all right, kidding aside, though, what did you learn doing?
I think, first of all, you'll never do anything harder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're looking at almost 12-hour days by the time you get home between the office and out there. You know, there's nothing harder than walking for 78 hours, banging on people's doors, never knowing what to expect or, like, the objections. I mean, the objections you're going to get from a residential place are so much different than a business place, right? You never know how people are going to act. In a business, right, you could call someone, like, 99% of the time, they're going to be at least professional, right? Maybe angry, but professional. You don't know what you're going to get out there, right? So I think number two, right, is just like expect the unexpected, right? Kind of keeps you on your toes. So I think, you know, starting here in Memory Blue, having that experience, you know, I guess a little easier maybe to call people on the phone. Like, was it right there? And, you know, yeah, having that experience and knowing that, like, they'll at least not be, you know, they'll at least be professional, right?
Yeah.
So I think that really helped, right? It was just like, one, the grit, right? The hard work, like knowing that I'd never do anything harder than that. And two, just kind of expecting the unexpected, staying on your toes, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Always being able to pivot. It's a lot easier pivot on the phone, maybe have like some notes there or whatever, than like someone right there in your face and you gotta like think about it on the spot.
You go sprint down the street and get to the trees.
That's
run from the law.
Run from the law. I love the guys, the kid throwing up. I've been there, my kid's throwing up in the foyer.
All right. So
that was the summer before your senior year.
Did you make any money?
Yeah, I did. I want to say I made $4,500 or something.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Better than looking at Starbucks.
Yeah. No, absolutely. The only depressing thing was, is if like you added up the hours that I worked and like divided it by the wage, it was incredibly low. Just because it was, half the day you're not even, I guess,
you're changing.
3-4 hours. Yeah, you're changing. Exactly. You know, I can't get paid while you're changing, but.
Dude, that's such a great experience.
Yeah.
Because you said too, and you're more introverted.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it absolutely pushed me out of my comfort zone. I to this day, I just don't know how I did it, you know?
Right.
Especially out there alone by myself. I mean, it's certainly easier to be out there with like a buddy and doing it that way, but to do it out and alone. But yeah, I guess I just...
It wasn't that long ago.
No, yeah. It just pushed me to be, you know, more social than I am. I mean, I can remember I got into conversations with people, you know, it wasn't necessarily bad all the time. I mean, like, I just became someone else. I became a little bit more social and figured out ways to kind of get people to open up.
Unbelievable. So you're knocking on doors for selling Fiancs.
Yeah.
Residential. What did your older brother and your parents think about this whole thing? Were they like, dude, this is a bunny pyramid?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't really remember talking about it with my parents, to be honest. I mean, I know I came home when I initially interviewed and told them I don't even know what I'm going to do. And they couldn't understand that I didn't know what I was doing. And I don't think I understood it either, you know? But I was like, whatever, I'm going to go do this thing. And I'm sure I complained to my mom and dad a few times throughout the summer talking to them. But I don't think that they had like any objections to me doing what I was doing.
It's cool.
It's great.
You might talk them out of it.
They're
stupid. Right.
Right? Yeah.
So it's good they didn't know. No. All right. So you come back to school, do your senior year, you're in this business fraternity. I was a business fraternity. They're all accountants at MIT or BIT guys, like business and I don't know. BIT, business technology.
Information technology.
Yeah, information technology. Like I don't know what it obviously. No one would in the sales. Business attorney, I was.
Yeah.
Like, what were the people doing who were coming out of pit with your business attorney?
There were a lot of finance and accounting guys, but I think we had plenty of marketing people as well.
Yeah.
And then I guess there were some few supply chain people too.
Yeah. And it's what you think you're going to do when you graduated.
I mean, to be honest, I didn't have a good idea. I mean, it's not that I didn't think about it. I thought about it all the time.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I still think about it to this day, right? Like, what are you really passionate about? Like, what do you really want to do? So it's not that I did. I mean, I went to every networking event that you think of, right? But a lot of the companies that Pitt brings in, or you know, any university and the, you know, the bigger partners, right? They're all large companies, and I knew I didn't want to work for a large company. Like for Pitt, I think like their cool partners were like UPMC, Oops Medical program there, Aldi, Heinz, Dick's Sporting Goods was a big one. Target. I didn't want to work for any of those like large companies.
Yeah.
I was very confused on what I wanted to do. You know, For whatever reason, technology did call to me.
Yep.
And I had never been in technology, but I thought like, just kind of like thinking about the future and all that kind of stuff was very fascinating to me. And the only technology company I knew was HubSpot because, you know, I read some of their blogs, they're all marketing, right? Obviously, pop up when you research some things.
Yep.
And so I did an interview there. I didn't ultimately get the job, but that was the only one I thought of. And then doing research from HubSpot kind of led me to like more technology companies. But the problem was, right, can't really go straight out of college to a tech company for marketing, right? A lot of, if you look at marketing, right, one of the best ways to start is to go to an agency because most of the brand side requires X amount of experience here. It's usually 3 to 5 experience at least, right? So I think I started looking at some agencies, but I don't think I was getting as many calls as I'd like. And then you know, I knew that the sales thing would be great to sell. So I started looking at SDR roles and in a lot of tech, right? Obviously, a lot of tech companies, right? SDR roles, entry level, no experience needed. So I got a lot of callbacks from those. So I just figured, you know, I never wanted to go into sales. I never really thought about doing it. But, you know, and even given the experience I have with door-to-door, I thought, well, you know, just like that, let's just try it, right? We're going to learn something from it. Sales and marketing are very intertwined, right? So even if I get there and say, all right, I don't want to be in this, right? I can learn something from it and I can use that experience to go somewhere else. Or, you know, I figure, you know, it surprises me and I want to go and stay in it.
And then, all right, so you give it a shot. How did you talk about us?
I think it was just an Indeed ad. And if I can remember correctly, I think I thought you guys were similar to my multi-level
No.
Because in the Indeed ad, right? I think because you guys worked with multiple clients, right?
Yeah.
And you didn't really say what you did. It was just like, you know, it's not like a brand that would be like, you know, our company helps with IT, blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
Right? And it was like, okay, that's a solid thing, right? It was, you know, we work with a bunch of clients, right? My other place would have said the same. We work with great enterprise clients, right. You know, so. But I applied and, you know, through the interview process, I learned like, all right, this isn't like I think it was just Indeed listening.
Did you know what you're going to do in the role? Most people take a job. They still kind of steer. Did you have an idea about it?
I'm pretty sure I did. Yeah. Cause I can remember asking some like detailed questions in the interview just about the role. I think, you know, that door-to-door sales position gave me like some knowledge of what I would be doing at least.
So when you applied, were you still in school or had you graduated from Pitt?
I graduated already. So I think it was like June. So it'd been like a month or two after I graduated.
Yeah, were you in Pitt or did you move back to your hometown?
No, I was still in Pitt, but at least and then until that I just needed something.
Right. And you moved down to DC?
Yeah, I was pretty much just open to moving wherever the job would land. So then I was applying. No, I'm very casual about moving, right? I'll move anywhere. I'm open to seeing different parts of the world. So
yep.
I was applying like everywhere.
And then what was it like when you started? Like, what do you remember?
Yeah, well, I was in Boone for like my first 2 weeks.
Oh, geez.
It was a completely different aspect over there to start out than it is, you know. Anywhere else.
You were
Just for like the first, I think it was like 2 weeks. Okay. I started on Jesse Matthews team.
Okay.
So that was it was a different experience over there than it would have been at HQ. I know some people right get on the phone right away, just depending on the client. I didn't call until six days into it, just because the client needed to ramp up and such, such and such. But Sam was my mentor, Sam Carter, right?
Oh, wow.
So that was a fantastic experience getting to listen to him. I remember always sit on I can't remember what he'd call it, the headsets that kind of like interconnected so that we could both hear. He had a weird name for it, but it was really funny. He was a great guy to learn from.
Very good.
His personality on the phone is great. So it was great to see that kind of aspect. He's very that rapport tape.
Yeah,
base guy, because he's just got such a great kind of social act.
Do you remember your first client?
Yeah.
Which one?
Simple Reach. So it would have been Simple Reach. Yeah.
What was it like learning the job? We still work with Tiger.
Oh, nice.
Is that crazy?
Yeah.
What was it like learning the job? So you had some really good experience.
Yeah.
Getting uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right? We love city poor people.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not.
Yeah. I mean, that job is so hard. And hard to do.
Yeah.
And anybody can do that. They can do this.
For a whole summer?
Yeah.
Hoofing it outside? Door to door?
In the heat?
Taking the meetings?
Yeah.
So, but tell us about what was it like learning the SDR job?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I struggled for quite a bit out of the gate. You know, I remember being, you know, naive in that, you know, get in and like I remember getting on a call with them and they were like, oh, we have no competitors, right? Well, person in the space doing this and that, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then you get on and, you know, it's crazy, right? I mean, you guys know how crazy the MarTech space is. I mean, that is packed as any space, right? So, you know, it was it was a change from the door to door. It was certainly difficult, right? I definitely got more people to answer doors than I ever did getting people to pick up the phone. And so I think that was a change for me, right? I'm sure if you compare my door numbers to my phone calling numbers, right? I mean, the connection rate and just how many doors I had to hit to make a sale versus how many dials I had to make to get a meeting booked were crazy.
Did you dig into your bag of jokes?
No, I didn't. I did some of those.
Did the thought ever cross your mind?
Not that I remember. I think I was like very eager to learn this industry and what you guys were pitching, right? Versus whatever I had learned there. And I knew, right, that's obvious. I knew it was a different environment, right? Commercial or residential versus business. So I don't think I wanted to attempt that. You know, I wanted to remain professional and do what you guys said to me in the script. Maybe I should have. I don't know, but I feel like that would have resulted in a lot of things.
And did you ever suggest to Jesse, your manager, or see him, your mentor, guys, we should do some chants?
No, I didn't bring any of the chants. I should have, though. I absolutely should have. I think some of those chants at the time still on. And nowadays, it'd be fun to reminisce, get them back, get them going. But
all right. So, what did you get? Dude, you qualified Friends Club. You had some good months. The company for sure, dude. Like, what did you get good at in the role?
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that's not totally aligned with the sales aspect of it is that even though I struggled for a long time on Super H, had a just rolling time hitting quota on that company, right? And I know that Super Reach, you know, after I kind of, you know, after, you know, 6, 7, 8 months, 9 months, whatever, the point of contact there, Matt and me became, you know, much more strategic partners. And so kind of he let me in some insights that they were struggling as well. They only had one SDR internally. He only emailed, right? So I knew it was tough out there for them. I knew it was tough in there for me. I didn't know that for the first, you know, 8, 9 months. I just figured, oh, they're crushing it. You know, I'm struggling. I think something that people don't think about coming here, right, is that if you are struggling, it's not just about quota. I mean, absolutely keep that in top of your mind, but you can be valuable to the points of contact in other ways, right? You're a strategic partner, right? And you're front line, right? You hear all kinds of incredible insights, right? Why people don't want it or do want it or what they're thinking about, what's in the industry, right? And I think that's just incredibly valuable for a Series A startup, right?
Yeah.
They don't get to hear those things. You know, they're guessing, their market research, whatever, right? So I think that there's just so much more that you can deliver them, even if you are struggling on a quota aspect, to help them out.
Ton more.
Yeah.
There's a ton more. And who else, do you remember any of the crew you were working with on Jesse's team? Because Jesse was an SDR. I mean, the overall two lost.
Yeah.
Teams, right? We moved offices.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that Boots team?
Palmers.
Andrew Palmers. Okay. And who were some of the memorable SDRs?
Oh, yeah. So it'd be Ross.
Big Dog?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ross Barton.
Big Dog.
Sat next to Ross.
He was an SDR?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think he started a month before I did.
Big Dog. How was his game?
He was much more aggressive than I always admired that. You know, I always wanted to have that aggression. If I was self-aware about anything, I knew that one thing I was lacking in sales was that I was not aggressive enough. So him overturning it, like he would go after people with objections over and over and over again. You know, like a lot of times he wouldn't follow, you know, like the 3-year-old, right? Like, and if you can't get over in 3 times, like he would just keep. And so I'd always wanted to have, you know, some of that in my arsenal. You know, other SDRs that I said, you know, Matt Bernfeld. Oh, you know, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
right on the phone. He crushed it. This, you know, Dong sat next to me. I already mentioned Sam Juan Pastor, you know, after, you know, 8, 9 months being there, he sat right next to me.
Yeah.
He was great on the phone. I don't know. It sounded so like professional. Like, calm and like, you know, like an expert in his industry.
What you
call people. Yeah. Richard Gray.
Hey, Richard, if you're listening, what's your favorite beer? Cold.
That's what he would say.
Yeah.
Oh. What's a character?
Right?
Yeah, so I had a lot of great people to sit around and learn a lot of things from.
You stick with things, right?
Yeah.
People get into that funk. It's a hard job.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about bailing?
Not that I can remember. I mean, it's not that I was certainly frustrated for a long point of time, you know, and when I say it couldn't hit, I think it took me 9 months to hit quota on support reach. And it's not for lack of effort. I mean, one of the things I knew coming in is I would have to put in the effort, right? I stayed late so many nights, you know, 6:30, 7:30, whatever it took, right? I mean, back in the day, Chris would walk in the old office, he would walk around. So I remember seeing that.
Yep.
A lot, right?
Yep.
So that's not how I knew I was late. You know, I came in Saturday, you know, a few times throughout it, depending on how bad I was struggling at the time. I think it's just sticking with it, you know. I mean, it's tough, right? And I think the only thing you can control at that time is your effort, right? I mean, I jumped up to 125 dials at one point just to, right, get 25 extra dials, in it, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe that's one more connect, and maybe that connect is a meeting. I think at like 7 or 8 months, I did ask Jesse, you know, I'd gotten to a point where I was like, I want to know, you know, not in any aspect to, you know, put blame on the industry I was calling in, but I just wanted to know, like, if I went on another client and called, would I face this, you know, the similar struggles, or would it be different? And can I learn from that and bring it back to another client? Right. But I did ask I had asked the call on Tiger Analytics like 8 months into it. I don't think it actually happened. I think they came back to me with something else, and then I slept on Simple Reach.
Okay.
But I was just kind of looking like, you know, am I going to face the similar challenges over there? And if I do, well, you know, what am I doing wrong? Or is it going to be different in this industry? And what can I learn from that to bring back to this industry? I think that's what I was looking for. And maybe just to gain like a little confidence, right? Book a few more meetings and gain some confidence. But I think 8-9 months into it, we really got into a role. You know, I became a very strategic partner with them, right? They, you know, they brought me in. They brought me more into their team, right? So I sat on team meetings with the VP of ops and their account executives, right? He got me onto their Salesforce, right? I was uploading, you know, email campaigns to their Salesforce. They put me on their Slack. So me and Matt were working very, very strategically together just to like find out how we solve the challenge of calling into this space. Because, you know, looking back, I've called on, you know, that was MarTech, and I called on 3 other clients, Memory Blue, and then I went on to 2 other sales jobs. That was the hardest I've ever called into. I'd never got any more hangups than calling into marketing. Like immediate hangups. And I don't think I ever had a lower connection rate than when I called into marketing, you know, in Fortune 1000 companies, anyone bigger than $1 billion in revenue. So I think it was, you know, partly just a connection aspect, right? Just connection, right? So you just really had to pump up those dials and hope you got one or two more connections.
I remember watching how hard this guy was working and really hoping
that's what mm-hmm.
So you put all that effort in.
Yeah.
And these companies, they're trying to figure it out too.
Yes.
It's obvious for you, you were right in the thick of it with them, right? It's like day to day, are they going to survive or not?
Right.
That's a business.
Yeah.
They could have gotten somebody more committed to their cause than you.
Yep.
Right? Shit. You're in it. So as you're doing this, what, did you go to Costa Rica?
If you're competitive, driven, and curious, it's time to consider a professional sales opportunity that your future self will thank you for. With an unmatched training program and a tradition of elevating our people, Memory Blue has helped hundreds of successful professionals launch lucrative tech sales careers. You will grow highly marketable skills through ongoing mentorship from seasoned sales leaders while showcasing your abilities for tech industry royalty and some of the hottest startups around. And you'll do it all surrounded by driven, like-minded colleagues immersed in our award-winning company culture. As your tenure progresses, you will attract a host of career options. This includes moving up internally or venturing out into the tech industry, where tech companies pay a premium for Memory Blue experience. We have immediate openings in our offices from coast to coast. Visit memoryblue.com/SDR and apply today.
No, because I don't know if you remember, I thought I'd be out. I thought it'd be a way.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. So it took me, I think 3 or 4 months to get a job because I was really analyzing everyone I was interviewing with. Maybe even more. I can't remember.
Let's talk about that search.
Yep.
You were.
I remember being involved in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
So you decided, okay, I'm going to keep doing this.
Yep.
And you were very deliberate, probably because your experience on systems, right? How difficult it was. You were very scientific about your, deliberate about your approach. Will you?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So, well, I think one thing, right, is that because I had spent 15 months in the Reclue, right, I didn't want an entry-level salary, right?
Yeah.
If I wanted an entry-level salary, I would have went somewhere else.
Yep.
After college. But I felt like I had really great experience in comparison to someone just coming out of college. Yep. So I was looking for a better LT. To hit better base, right? And everyone in Boston was pitching me, you know, 40, 45K for a base and like 60, 65 LTE. And I wanted something a little bit higher than that. So I think that was number one. But also, right, I was just, you know, I wanted best college fit and along with it. So, you know, I interviewed, I don't remember how many companies I interviewed with, you know, maybe 10, maybe more, you know, if we're counting first round interviews and such. Quite a number. And then I went to AtQs at Boston. That was the one I initially chosen, or that was the one I picked to go to. And they had reached out to me on LinkedIn.
How much did you look at the tech? You looked at, obviously, comp was important.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly, true. Be curious about what type of technology, what kind of experience working in a company that was, you know, struggling to figure it out.
Yeah. I think I was initially. I wouldn't have wanted to go somewhere where I was completely turned off by the tech.
Yeah.
But I think after I started struggling a little bit with the salary, finding a place, I was a little bit more open to it.
Okay.
I remember one of the first places I interviewed at was Buildium, and they're like a property technology. And I found that technology really interesting. So I think I started there. And then after struggling a little bit, I was a little bit more open to it, to where I would go. Mm-hmm. But, you know, AppQs had reached out to me on LinkedIn, and then another company, I think it was just an Indeed job posting. So I was doing two at the time. These were my like two final ones, and the other one was called AcroLinks. They were out in Burlington. And I can remember, so I went out there, I flew out there. The AcroLinks one paid for me to fly out there. So I went out there and interviewed with them both on the same day and came back pretty sure knowing what one I'd wanted. And then the AcroLinks one got back to me with 10K higher offer, right? Like all, you know, I didn't discuss, right? Just all of a sudden the base was not 60, but 70K. And I had been getting pitched, you know, 40, 43 all the time. So that was a huge jump. And 90K OT, which is like the extreme I'd heard thus far, right?
That
those were big numbers to me. And it was out of nowhere. They didn't mention it in the interview. And AppQs had gone, I don't think they were going to give me any more than 50K, I think, right? And so I remember talking to Chris about it and see what I should do. And I could still remember to this day calling the hiring manager at AppQs. And Chris had told, I think he had told me like how to deliver it. And I gave like this Oscar award winning sigh. I can remember the sigh to this day. Like I think that was like the best call I've ever met. Yeah. Oh yeah. I said, John. And I gave like this sigh and I said, I'm in a really tough spot right now. And I wasn't lying. I wasn't in a tough spot. Because I liked the culture that, you know, when I went into AppQs, it like the energy was there. And they were a Series A startup, just post Series A startup. I really wanted to go to a small startup and take the risk on like, you know, hopefully taking a ride to, you know, Series ED, F, et cetera, right? And I just felt like there was an energy. I liked the people I met with more. When I went to the other office, there was no, I mean, granted it was like 8:30 in the morning. There was no energy. The VP of marketing I interviewed with was like so laid back. And I was telling him about this job. And I remember like him just being like shocked that I called like 100 people. Like it was shocking to him. And I was like, maybe I don't want that, you know, like, why aren't you calling 100 people? Because they weren't a startup, but they were pivoting. And so they were struggling. So they were pivoting. It was like, it's kind of like a grand relief for enterprise businesses. Almost. And so I don't know. I felt like there wasn't good energy there. I felt like they didn't have a good path, but the money was obviously there. So. Yeah. So, you know, I was calling John and I delivered that and he was able to get me you know, close to 54. Like, so it was actually like 3.5. And some, you know, I think there was like some guaranteed commission in there for like moving expenses. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, I guarantee I'm going to put you with my two best sales reps to mentor you. And I felt like that was enough for me to, yeah, me to move up there.
You remember how Liberty was the search?
I do.
Yeah.
I remember.
What do you remember?
I for some reason, I remember if you were very specific, at least initially, it was, if I remember correctly, it was got to be in Boston, got to be MarTech.
Yeah.
Right?
I think
very, very specific.
Yeah, I think it was MarTech, and I think property tech were my two things, but there's not like a lot of property tech companies that building one, which is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought it was great. They pay a very low salary. I think maybe because of like, you know, the whole inbound approach and what have you.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I was still interested in checking that out again after I didn't get the job initially, you know, post college, but yeah, the salary was incredibly low there.
And then, so made the move up to Boston, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did it great. Took tour duty with us, man. Appreciate your hard work, right?
For sure.
I mean, just clients. Not, I always remember you finally trying to find your day. So I was impressed by that. And then, so what was it like working at
Yeah, it was crazy. They have a spot right now. Well, at the time, they had a spot right down by TD Garden. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I just felt like a startup. I always wanted to go to startup because I wanted to like, feel that like energy of like, we're doing something here and like,
yeah,
maybe one day we, you know, go public, you know, like that whole, yeah, kind of like ride. Right. And it just felt like that, you know, it was like in this like old building, floors were, you know, like up, you know, floors were unstable. Right. It was just, you know, I had that
vibe.
Yeah. That feeling about it. So it was great from that aspect. Me and another guy were the first enterprise sales reps they brought on. So I think it was really fun to like, take my experience from Emery Blue and be like the first person, and no one cold called there either. They had two other SDRs that were on the like SMB side of things, right? And they only email. I think like they sent out like 8,000 emails or something the previous month. It was crazy.
Yeah.
So we came in, and I think it was just fun to like to lay the groundwork for what the enterprise SDR role was going to be, and kind of like put my mark on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And was the goal to get into a closing role?
Yeah.
Right? I remember talking about that. And did you talk about that? You know, all the SDRs who were listening are like, how did you close? You did.
Yeah, no,
how did you try and position yourself during this process? How am I going to get my hand up? Well, I'm close.
Yeah, well, I think one thing is if you go to a startup like this, it's just such a tight-knit community. I don't want to say family, but right. That, you know, the CEO is right there. Right. I can talk to the CEO anytime I want to. Right. And like the whole sales team was right behind me. Right. When I did move there, like 2 weeks after they moved up, there was a bunch of people that moved up to the second floor because they were growing. But I mean, everyone's right there. You know, you can network with everyone, you know, become friends with everyone. Right. Pick everyone's ear because they're right there. And so I think part of that is just, you know, like going out of your way to make sure you're talking to everyone and picking everyone's brain. And, mm-hmm, you know, my mentor was great at the time. He was one of the top salespeople there. And so I think it's just that kind of like learning aspect of it and just, you know, chatting with people every day.
Were you letting people know that you wanted to get into a closing role?
Yeah. No. Yeah, absolutely. I think probably like 6 months after I was there, 6-7 months after I was there, you know, we seriously started talking about it, and they were starting to train us on it. The only problem was, and you know, obviously the risk of going to a startup like this is that they were struggling after their post Series A.
Yep.
And the sales team didn't even have, you know, enough work to be doing on. Like they had too big of a sales team at that time.
Yeah.
So there was just constraint there. Right. And so, I mean, that's the risk of going to one of these startups, right? You never know if they're going to fail, mm-hmm, or if they're going to succeed. And so, you know, me and another guy, probably the best SDR I've ever worked with. No offense to any Memory Blue people I worked with, but
what made this person so good?
Yeah. This guy came in probably like 4 or 5 months after I started working there. I've never seen someone be able to immediately get the person on the phone, their friend, like this. I mean, immediate. I don't even know how they did it. I think part of it was probably an innate personality trait, but not to say that he
was. What's his name?
Matt. Okay. Yeah. I think part of it, you know, was an innate personality trait, but not to say that he didn't work on it, because I'm sure he did, but it was just like instantaneously anyone on the phone was this guy's friend, you know, and he's swearing with him. I remember this one time he called a guy who was, I think, in Europe or something on vacation. And he kept this guy on the phone forever. And he was just like, it was like his old time buddy, you know, it was just like such, I wish I had that power that he had. It was just like so crazy how, you know, they would just talk, you know, it's like they were old time friends.
Some people have that gift, the cult of personality.
Yeah.
So you, closing, was it, you knew you wanted to do that, certainly deliberate enough to learn how to do it. And AFQs, what getting a closing role is going to have, trajectory of the company, you know, the state of life.
Yeah.
So did you start looking again? Or like, well, how did, because you got into a closing role.
No, so I got laid off.
Question you ever get once.
Yeah, I got laid off with a bunch of other people. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to get our Series B that summer. They were looking for the Series B that summer. They didn't get it, and they were looking to pivot. I think from my understanding, they were looking to bring on like more engineering people and twist the, you know, completely pivot the product, right? So a bunch of salespeople, SDRs, SDR manager, marketing people, right? A bunch of us got laid off as they pivoted. And so when that hit, you know, I was, you know, like I had said, right, I was in training for AE, but there were no rules open at the time. So I was already in the training. So I really didn't want to go back to an SDR role. And to be honest, at the time, I was thinking of sales for me, right?
Yeah.
I was reflecting on it, but I knew I did not want to go through 2.5 years of work and not see what the AE position held.
Yep.
Because, during my time at Rick Blue and during my time at AppQs, listening in to all these AE calls, I thought that might be something that I'd really enjoy, talking about the technology. So I knew how hard it was. A lot of people say how hard it is to just go from SDR to AE in a new company, but I was determined to try it. Yeah, I did. I mean, I found a position actually pretty quickly. Within 4 weeks of me leaving there, I was able to get a position at a company called Smart Bear for an AE position. So I did make the switch, and I went up there and I did the closing role for you.
What did they sell?
So they have a large portfolio of products that help software engineers with, I mean, pretty much everything you can think of, right? My two products that I sold were API and UI test automation, right? So back end and front end, basically testing your APIs and UIs to make sure the software is functioning efficiently.
And what did you learn in that role? Like, is there something you like about it, right?
Yeah. You know, for me, right, I mean, you know, all the way from Memory Blue on, you know, and we talked about, right, the research aspect of everything, you know, I loved research and outreach and hopping on to like earnings calls and investor calls and reading annual reports and like finding those like little nuggets that you could send through to people to get them interested. So that was always one part I enjoyed, right? And obviously, like, you know, LinkedIn building, right? Just because of that research aspect of it. So I think those were like, those were like fundamental pieces of what I enjoyed throughout the process, and like consistently doing that throughout the process, right? Just because you do it at the start doesn't mean you shouldn't keep doing it, right? Yeah. You never know when, you know, you're talking to someone and you're selling them, right? And they're in the sales cycle, right? And even if it's 2 or 3 months down the line, whatever, right? And maybe news breaks and you see, you know, that person you're talking to, right? A new product is being released in the department, something that you can say, well, like, you know, what's going on with this? How can I help with that? Right. So I think it's a continual process.
Can enjoy doing that. Was that helpful in this? Did you develop other skills in a closing role? Because that's what they share with me. Well, how do I get in a closing role? You were able to do it. You had enough street cred. And then we got into the closing role. What did you have to develop that you didn't have?
I mean, so much. I think the general understanding of the entire sales cycle and how much it differentiates from the SDR role, right? Being that, you know, SDR, you call, you set up a meeting, you're good, leave, you know, in this role, set up the meeting, do the meeting. And then you got, you know, an entire sales cycle bringing in, you know, we always worked with, you know, solutions engineers there, sales engineers there. So there's that very technical, I think that's one very hard part of it was when I bring these people on for demos, like, what is my kind of role? What is my response? How do I work with these people, right? Because I don't really know anything from that aspect. But engineers, right, they want to know the technical, you know, details of these products. So where do I fit in? I think that's one crucial thing you need to understand. And part of that just comes from being on a number of these calls, right? Where do I fit in and like, where do I interject in? Because I don't want to, you know, a lot of these people, you know, they'll come on, they have so many analytic questions, so many questions about the software, right? Mm-hmm. Engineers are very analytic people. So you don't want to, you know, you don't want to take that time away necessarily, right? You want that person to have a solid understanding of the software, but you also, right, you need to continue your sales process. So I think that's one crucial aspect. And then, you know, I think legal and procurement are just like two beasts that you just never learn as an SDR. You really have to figure out. You know, one of the bigger deals that I sold was, you know, to a company that, you know, they worked for like a defense contractor, right? There's a construction company, but they had like a defense contracting side of their business, right? And so, you know, that's just a whole another mind built to go through.
Yeah. So like learn how to, what's your role in the demos, you know, closing deals. How do you close some deals?
Yeah.
You got a memorable deal?
Yeah. So that would have been that one. So that was it was technically the biggest deal I closed when I was there. Although there's one other that will haunt me, but it was more of a sales territory fight that I'll take to my grave.
I want to hear that about that
one. Yeah, yeah.
But this was my most memorable one that I officially closed. I think it was 56,000.
Yeah.
And SmartBearer is roughly 10,000 average selling price. So
this is a big deal.
Yeah. You know, but they expect people to close those deals, you know, month in and month out. Right. And, you know, there were people there, right? Some of the strategic people that, you know, I think when I was there, their biggest deal closed company history, I think it was like over a million. But yeah, that was that company that was a construction company, but they had a defense side of the business and it probably took like 3 or 4 months to close down. It was an intense evaluation. We were on the Gartner report. They were evaluating everyone on the Gartner report. And so I think, you know, it takes, you know, I think another thing to take away from the differentiation of SDR to AE is that you're only talking to one person as an SDR, right? Talk to you, I set up a meeting for the most part, right? Talk to you, I set up a meeting, I hand you off to my AE, you know, and the sales process, maybe you're talking to one main point of contact, two main point of contacts, but you have to be thinking about 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 points of contacts for just one sale, right? And if you have a pipeline of 10, 15 deals, right? That's how many people, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, for that deal, right? I mean, it was very expansive. They had large goals and, you know, so I had to be consistently reaching out to multiple people, especially as like, you know, the lower level people were trialing the software, right? I always think, you know, if I'm someone that's trialing software, what do I want? I want the best customer experience, right? I want the best experience I can possibly get. I want to know that if the software breaks or I can't figure out something, right, I can go to someone and get it figured out. I got a job to do. So I think it's, you know, it's reaching out to those people and not necessarily even being salesy with them, not to say that you can't get information, but saying, you know, how's it going? Are you having trouble? Can I connect you with a technical assistant here, right? And then, you know, maybe gathering some of how you like it, right? What are your feelings and blah, blah, blah. So I think, you know, there's that detailed aspect of it that you really need to hammer on when you have a bigger deal like that.
So you were a successful rep. I mean, you got there.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't even get there.
I want to hear about this territory.
Tell the territory bubble. Then we'll talk about why you pivot.
This is the cheesy side of sales, and it goes on at every single.
Yeah, it's too much to explain probably for the time that we have, and I don't want to, you know, get, you know,
it's good,
you know, too crazy. But really, what it was is that, you know, this was cold outreach too, right? So already I feel, you know, so there's a company called, there was a company I had already sold a couple of deals to in my time there. Smaller deals, right? I think 8,000, 16,000, something like that. And essentially the way that this company was built is that there was an umbrella, right? And there was essentially what they called four separate entities, all with the same name. But I had sold deals to this one company. I was talking to kind of another entity that no one owned in Salesforce, and then someone owned another entity, right? So this one no one owned in Salesforce. I had sold it to one and someone else owned another. And you know, went through that process. It was a crazy deal. I reached out cold. She told me no. We already have something in place. I never used to do this, but I think either an AppFuse or SmartBear, I started to switch, and I would just send back a little note if someone told me no. Nothing super salesy. I think it was just like one line, and she got back to me because they were looking for another product in our arsenal.
Yeah.
And the good thing was is that it was our most expensive product.
Yeah.
And it wasn't sold a lot. It was called Load UI Pro.
Yeah.
And it was for basically testing the speed of your APIs and if they would break, if so many people clicked on a website or whatever.
Yeah.
At a given time. It was vastly our most expensive license. And so I did a demo with this large team. I can remember the lady, she was incredibly personal. She wanted very, very customer experience to the stream. She said, we always work with small companies so that they give us the best customer experience. So I kind of had to bridge that because we weren't really small. We didn't have a customer success team. AEs did customer success and sales.
Yeah.
So I had to really sell that in there. And then one or two, just a few days after we had this demo, and it didn't seem like it was that speedy, she got back to me and she's like, in 30 minutes, I have a call with like our executive team and I need to like sell this in. And I could tell how serious it was. And you know, I had not sold something that large before. So I was, you know, slagging my manager on the side, be like, please tell me you can hop on a call in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
We hopped on this call, you know, the entire executive, you know, we got VPs in the room and everything. And they're suddenly talking about this deal that could be like anywhere from like 250,000 to like 400, that like the numbers were crazy to me, right?
Yeah.
And I remember I did not catch this, but my manager caught it. And the guy was bluffing, and he had said that, you know, they might go with some other software, but his screen was up and he slacked his like friend and he was like, we're not going to go with them. So we kind of knew that they wanted to go with us. They were trying to get us to lower the pricing.
Yeah.
So I you know, we got out the call, we entered it into Salesforce. Now here was the kind of the issue, right? I couldn't enter it into the company I had already sold in because that company was not paying their bills. Right. And so they were restricted in Salesforce, right? I had to work on getting them to pay for the software licenses they already own. So I had to enter it into another, entity in Salesforce, right? And apparently you enter best case, worst case, et cetera. I think best case is like 500,000, right?
Yeah.
Some alarm bells went off.
Yeah.
in the company and people that I had never even talked to. Apparently, I was working at home at the time, and my manager told me that this guy had come up and he said, you know, that's not for his deal, right? And it wasn't his deal either.
Yeah.
I was like a top gun at the company. And, you know, people I'd never talked to was suddenly like in my deal here.
Yeah.
But, you know, he had nothing to, I don't know why or how he knew about it, but so it suddenly became this big thing. But I was still responsible for like taking this deal along. And, you know, I did. I took it along all the way. You know, in my heart, I closed it because I took it all the way until about 18 hours before the final PO.
Did the outbound work?
Yeah.
First the deal.
And so it was what they had said, it was a location, it's based on PO location, right? And they were either going to sign in North Carolina where the other entity was owned by some guy. That's where it was. The other entity that we already worked with, they signed the deals in North Carolina, or they said New Jersey. Now, here's the thing. I had signed deals I'd signed POs already in the company for New Jersey, but my company was technically in some Latin American company. I can't remember, right?
Yeah. Maybe
Panama or something. And that's what it was in the Salesforce. But I had already done deals in New Jersey through that other entity this year. No one had called me out on it because they were 8K, 6K, whatever.
Right.
And this was very large. And so it just ultimately ended that I had to give the deal over to the other guy because they were saying it was going to be North Carolina, and the guy on the phone that I was talking to, one of their like procurement people, was going to like underwrite this deal onto that entity or something, like under that entity and connected to that entity for some reason. And here's even the kicker. So I get it off and it closes like within 18 hours. It ended up being 100K. They gave him a bunch of discounts because it was the end of the quarter.
Yeah.
But still, it would have been 10K in commission. It was about the biggest commission I ever had.
Yeah.
And the PO closed in New Jersey, but it didn't even close in North Carolina. I looked in Salesforce, it was New Jersey, but I closed deals in New Jersey. So I'll hold that one.
So another rep got credit commission.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
What about a split? Was that ever up for discussion?
It was at one point. They were, my manager was fighting for it, you know, and I think part of it too was some pride that I didn't want to split it. Not to say that I they offered, and I just said no. But I think throughout it, I kind of like kept telling them, like, I either want it all or I don't want it. And maybe that was just like a point of pride, but.
And what about the other, this other guy who got the deal?
Yeah. What about it?
Deal? Any thanks or?
Oh, it was very awkward. No, it was very, very awkward. I remember them. I think he slacked about it in a larger group, and then he deleted the message or something. It was a very awkward situation.
Lame. Yeah.
You gotta work something out. You know, the guy who went outbound found the deal. Nothing.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, if it accounts for anything, my manager did help me out like a month later. Some guy on our team left. And when someone leaves on our team, we'd kick the deals. Got to disperse the deals. He did disperse a deal to me that was like $3,500. That was like ready to close. I think it closed in like 2 days after that. So he did kick a little over.
That's good.
All right. So through all this, dude, you would, my mind's, you're a successful rep. You got it.
Right? Yep.
Closing work. You said, not for me.
Yeah.
Right? Just walk us through that.
Yeah. What was the straw that broke the camel's back? Was it that deal?
No, I was already looking at that time, and the deal would have been great to have coming out of it.
Of course.
Especially because, you know, those discounts didn't really even come in until the very end from management. But at one point, I thought I was going to get $30,000. I thought it was going to be a $300,000 deal.
Yeah.
So I remember, because I left Friday, it kind of happened really quickly, and I left on a Friday. And I think I went to the beach that weekend, and I just, like, sat there, like, picturing, like, $30,000 in my bank account. But anyway, no, it was really more, I just didn't enjoy most of the aspects of the job. I wasn't really passionate about it. I knew it wasn't what I was meant to do. You know, I just didn't, you know, that kind of, you know, you don't wake up and you're enjoying what you're doing, right? And I wanted that to be what I felt every day. So, you know, I wanted to look into marketing and made the switch there.
Awesome, man. The best thing about that is you gave it a run though, you know?
Yeah.
And you did everything right. You worked hard. And then you said, yeah, it's not.
How long were you in AE?
A year, full year.
So how long is an SDR?
Two and a half.
So 2.5 years as an SDR, made it to the AE land, did it for a year. That's a good, that's a great run.
So it was a weird time to be an AE too, because I think I got there in November 2019. I didn't get my official territory until mid-January, and then COVID hit.
Wow.
Later.
Yeah.
Could be advanced course.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So you said you want to go into marketing.
Yeah.
So what are you doing now?
So I went to an agency. I initially started on the client strategy team. Client strategy team was like the bridge between all of the channels in an agency, right? So your paid search, your social, like your TV, et cetera, and the client, right? Making sure everyone's aligned. I felt like that'd just be a good entry point to marketing because I already had like that kind of client facing aspect role, and then did it, you know, learned. That was a great start to learn a lot because I worked with all the teams, right? So it was a good, like, learn a little bit from each channel and about the client. And then just a few months ago, I made the switch to a new team. They rolled out a new team. It's just four of us. It's called the strategic planning team. They work with both new business pitches and then existing clients, right? Or projects involving, you know, maybe a new business comes in, and in the, you know, new biz pitch, they want to kind of, you know, show our competitive skills off, right? So we might put together a pitch that says, like, here's your audience details, right? Here's what your competitor is doing. Here's what they're spending. Here's what we think you should. So we have like 6-7 research tools that we pay for that we go into.
So you get that research part too.
Combine a bunch of research, make a story out of it, put it in deck, and then, you know, sometimes we're a part of those presentations.
And you didn't have any break. Like, you left, you were selling, then you went into the marketing world pretty seamlessly.
Yeah. I think it just had a week off from sales. And then,
you talk about your experience, like what you've been doing, if that was attractive?
I mean, I think a lot of things, right? I think one thing, right, is just like anyone coming out of sales, like, they've done the hardest part of business, right? So, I think they probably see that aspect. But, you know, number two, I mean, there's just such a communication aspect that you get from sales, right? Being able to talk to people is critical, especially client-based roles. Mm-hmm. So I think there's probably part of that aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how do you see yourself going from here?
Yeah. Probably a tough question. You know, I like, you know, a lot of parts of what I do right now, but I think I'm still probably searching a little bit for like what I'm most passionate at.
Yep.
You know, and so I think there's probably some reflection to do there. But, yep. You know, I certainly enjoy a lot of the aspects of what I'm doing at now. But if you're going to ask me, you know, where are you going to be in 5-10 years? I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair.
So it's agency work.
Yeah. Yep.
So how many clients are you working with?
Well, in this role, it's infinite just because we're project based. And it's new. So we will have, and we do have, you know, clients that kind of pay a retaining fee for ongoing projects, but we're ramping that up, right? The department just started like 5 months ago. So, but outside of that, it's project based. So
is it all virtual, or are you in an office with the team?
Fully remote all the way since March 2020, because we never went back to the office. I only went back to the office, I think, 4 times when I worked in sales. And then I moved into this role. And at the time, they had a WeWork in Boston, about 10 people, 10, 15 people. I think they only had it because they had acquired a company back in 2018. But after COVID, they shut that down because I don't think anyone was using it. So I'm fully remote.
It's cool. For sure.
It's cool. Whoever you're working with is going to look. You're so committed, and you're smart, and you're hardworking. And I think it's one to say out. He got to the closing, said I didn't want to do it, and pivoted into a really cool space. I think this stuff is performance marketing, perhaps all these channels, ridiculously growing, yeah. Right?
All right?
A lot of opportunity for it.
Mm-hmm.
And people, I don't see people in that world coming back into the sales world. I mean, I'm saying you can't go back, but I'm saying, like, I think it's such a good switch that you're doing it the better way.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the job, it is crazy if you switch from sales to marketing, and I don't want to say I didn't have any challenges doing it, but just how easy, the job feels, because
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, anyone that's done sales knows it's the hardest aspect of business.
Yeah.
Right? And so yeah. It almost feels, you know, like it's, I don't know. It just feels incredibly easy to be doing the job. Not to say that there aren't challenges in any job, yeah. But you know, you certainly don't have kind of that you know, continuous pressure that drives sales.
What advice would you have for someone thinking about doing this or considering it?
Yeah, I think one is just, I mean, you should stick with sales. I mean, if you come in, you know, first 2 weeks and you really know it's not for you, but you should take some time to reflect, right? And really, you know, ask yourself some questions about what it is you don't like, right? And if it's just that you don't want to work hard, right? Like that's very easily changed, right? You know, but if there are certain, you know, aspects to the selling role that you don't like, right? You're just not, you know, you're not passionate about it, right? Maybe, you know, it's the conversations. Maybe you want to roll away from people when you go back to school for software engineering. I don't know, but you really need to take some time and understand what you don't like about it. I mean, you need to take some time in the role to understand, you know, is it just an area I'm going to pick, right? So I think it just takes a lot of reflection and truly understanding what you want to do in life. And then, you know, once you come to that decision, right, then it's about understanding what do you want to do next.
Yeah. It's got to be deliberate about it.
Yeah.
Right. And then when you looked into what type of marketing, how did you decide this is the type of marketing?
Well, I knew I would probably like to make my way back to tech at some point, right? I'm still incredibly passionate about tech. I actually have a TikTok channel. I talk about it.
I'm
trying to grow a TikTok channel. Yeah.
Okay.
About a few months that I talk because I want to stay.
Channels. We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. That's, it's at seriously spelled like serious funding.
Yeah.
So SERIESOULY.
Yep.
So I've been doing that for a few months. So I've always, I think starting at AppQs, maybe even a little bit here, I've tried to do like side projects to determine what I really want to do in life. And I've always wanted to make something for myself, but I don't know what exactly, right? So I tried writing a couple of times. I remember one time I bought a URL and didn't really like it. And I tried it again. I think there's some articles I've put on Medium, trying to like put a humor aspect into, you know, a lot of series funding news, but I didn't really like the talking point aspect of it. And so I just started a channel a few months ago.
All right.
Because it helps me to stick with the industry. If there's one thing I know I'm passionate about, it's the technology industry.
Huh?
I don't know. It's what, but I love learning about it. I love reading about it. I love talking about it. So I want something on the side that I can at least like stick with that industry. And, you know, if it turns into something, right, and I gain a lot of following, obviously there are brand partnership deals.
Sure.
I can have secondary income or it whatever, you know, get really big. Who knows what it could be.
Yeah. That's cool. That's kind of marketing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And exactly. It interjects me into that world, right? Because TikTok's becoming huge in marketing, right? The pandemic, you know, exponentially grew the platform, right? Everyone still think, a lot of people out there still think of TikTok as your high school age, like dances, jokes, right? The demographic has skewed greatly, right? Over 50% of people on TikTok now are 18 plus, right?
Yeah.
And there's a huge, I mean, there's a, I think some, just looked at the statistics the other day. I think there's a, I think like 33% are like in the 20 range, right? And then like there's a huge block that's in the 30 to 40. And so it's skewed vastly since the pandemic and since it's grown, which is not, you know, different than other social media platforms, right? Facebook, right? And how it's skewed nowadays. So I think it's just a great time to like get on that platform. The algorithm is still helping a lot of people before they get a lot of ads on there, right? So it's just something like I got to take my passion of learning and reading a bit about technology and talking about it, but I feel like also hopefully setting it up for growth on it.
Yeah.
And that's awesome.
The lesson here as we wrap up, Corey, is this guy does things, he does them well.
Thorough.
He's going to do the 13 weeks at Sidcore, right?
Yep.
Doing that, coming to work for us. Thorough. He did it well, dude. Did this path to get the closing role, did all of those things extremely well.
Closing deals for coworkers.
Closing, getting commission checks for coworkers.
Just
having to read it in Salesforce.
Yeah.
You know, and whoever you work with now on the client side, tells you doing some net new business stuff too, they're going to benefit from your sales experience. You're going to teach a lot of people a lot of things on sales, selling. And I'm looking forward to kind of tracking you. See what you end up doing.
Yeah,
you're passionate about. I appreciate this passion.
Yeah.
And I think for people listening who say, well, sales, give it a shot, get to the closing spot, right? Because you're going to learn a lot along the way. And reflection, other stuff is just not, in some ways, easier.
And if we've learned anything, if you have the discipline.
Yeah.
And the consistency, the muscle will fall.
Always in one.
Absolutely.
Corey, thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you guys. I appreciate this.
Very good. Thanks, Corey.
If your sales team struggles to hit quota or generate qualified leads, Memory Blue's Academy Prospecting Principles Training Program is the solution. Great sales training is time intensive and requires continuous guidance from sales experts. In this 6-week course, our world-class facilitators use a hands-on learning approach to turn raw talent into industry-leading salespeople. From building targeted outreach lists to strategically overcoming objections, the key prospecting skills taught here create the foundation for strong sales performance. Our proven training cuts SDR ramp time in half and increases quota attainment by 89%. New cohorts launch twice per month. Head to memoryblue.com/academy to see upcoming dates and secure your seat today.
Thanks for listening to Tech Sales is for Hustlers. Please subscribe and leave a 5-star review after the beep.